Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and I'm getting you ready for The Amazing Race 28 Episode 8 Recap. Now, I am on the road, much like The Amazing Racers, but you are going to be in good hands tonight as Jessica is going to be with Dan Heaton and Mike Bloom talking about everything from the episode, and I will be back with you guys for Amazing Race exit interviews and also for The Amazing Race Recap coming up next Friday night at 9:15 p.m. Also, this episode of the Amazing Race podcast is sponsored by our friends over at Wix. Because if you need a website, why not do it yourself with Wix.com? Because you could get the word out about your business just like a social media mogul. It all starts with a stunning website. No matter what business you're in, they have something for you. And Wix.com is used by more than 75 million people throughout the world. Any country you're going to on the Amazing Race, people are using Wix.com, empowering business owners to create their own professional websites, and you could do it yourself. You don't need to be one of these programmers or designers. Here's how, because there's easy drag and drop features and hundreds of designer-made customizable templates to choose from. You can even add video to your background. No coding needed. No, absolutely not. And you can get your website live today. It's free. Go to Wix.com, sign up for a free account today. No credit card is needed, none whatsoever. It's easy. The result is stunning. So go to Wix.com today. That's W-I-X.com today. Enjoy the recap of Amazing Race.
Coming to you live from many places that are not Rob's apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast, and we are here to discuss episode 8. Of season 28 of The Amazing Race, and obviously I am not Rob Cesternino, but you guys know me because I'm here every week. My name is Jessica Lise, and with me this week, we have some very special guests. We have to get two guys to replace one Rob, but they're pretty great guys, and I'm sure you will agree we're going to have a lot of fun tonight as we discuss everything that happened in Dubai. So please welcome to the Rob Has a Podcast main stage the two guys that have helped me out on Amazing Race stuff for years and years and years. We have the wonderful co-host of the Amazing Race Canada podcast, Mr. Dan Heaton. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Jess. I am thrilled to be here as half of Rob.
Excellent. And the other half of Rob, representing the now defunct third Fantasy Amazing Race team, the one and only Mike Bloom.
I was going to wear my black flannel, but I feared that Dana would hate tweet me, so I settled for this outfit. And I'm feeling very comfortable, I might say. It's gotten to be spring temperatures in New York, and I'm feeling the heat, so I decided to dial back appropriately.
Well, that's good, because I don't think we really want to do anything to provoke Dana. She's had a hard enough time of it as it is.
Yeah, she's going to call me ludicrous, and she's going to call me psychotic. So I get enough of that from other people on the internet. I'll have Dana steer clear of that.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good idea. So, you know, non-elimination, but still pretty eventful, I would say. And I think we got to say our top story tonight has got to be the epic Dana and Matt meltdown, so we should probably just go ahead and start there. Like, it looked like things were going better for them recently. I'm not sure exactly what happened here.
It was weird. Like, there was a little argument with the camels, and then I guess he wasn't hearing her directions, and it was one of the stranger arguments I've ever seen on The Amazing Race. Like, I still don't really know.
Well, the problem was, okay, and I want to be fair to both parties here, but in my opinion tonight, Dana sounded like a sourpuss due to the fact that she was complaining about Matt not complaining when they were in the desert. And I can understand you're on a very exhausting journey around the world, but when it gets to a certain point when you're yelling at your partner for not sympathizing with you, it's kind of boiling things down to semantics. And it seemed like their main conflict at the end of the episode just boiled down to the fact that she was giving directions, he was confused by the directions, but she took it as like an affront to her. So on the one hand, I can completely understand where she's coming from in terms of it feels like a mental roadblock and nothing involving, you know, putting together a puzzle, little puzzle in loose quotations that I'm sure we'll talk about later. But on the other hand, I do feel like, I don't know, I might have to take his side from this perspective just because the things that she was finding fault with didn't seem that legitimate, in my opinion.
So are we saying, like, who do we think this reminds us most of? because I was thinking Brendan and Rachel for a while, and then like there's a little tinge of the Haley, I'm always right and you never listen in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It seemed like at a certain point I thought for a second that they were done. That they were completely 100% done.
Yeah, I wondered if they were going to quit. And I know once it went to commercials, we had to probably assume they wouldn't. But I wonder if this has gone on they've showed little bits of it. But I think she was telling him, go to the left. And he was just, not hearing her. And I think this was just, probably a lot of things we never saw with him just not understanding things like which way to walk or drive. But it seemed like she was losing her mind, but maybe it was the quote-unquote puzzle that got her in that zone going in.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're asking about who to compare it to, I mean, I don't know who out there watched Amazing Race Canada 3 alongside the three of us, but I'm trying to remember that dancing team, right? The ones that were on the most recent season, they quit. Or they had that thing where they had to go through that military obstacle course, and they had a furious falling out, and then they sort of quit. And by quit, they just sort of gave up the race. So it's sort of is talking about what you just mentioned, Dan. If there might have been a chance, if they had actually done that, they probably would have been closer to that example. Whereas I think what you're alluding to, Jess, is Dana's sort of a best of mixtape of all the racer meltdowns we've experienced thus far. We got a little bit of Rachel Riley. We've got a little bit of, we got a little bit of Colin mixed in there, considering how much she was freaking out at the puzzle. We got Haley in there. So I feel like she's sort of a blended mix of all the racer freakouts we've had over the past 27 seasons.
It's like they grew her in a lab.
she's the test tube baby of Amazing Race 28.
Well, the amazing thing is, we've seen little hints of this before, but we have not seen a full-on freakout from her. She does get a little snippy at points, but it seems like we should have been talking about them a lot more before this point. And this is the first time I think we've gone whole episodes where Rob and I have not even brought up their names. And it seems very we know what kind of person she is. We know how she reacts to things, but it still seemed kind of almost out of nowhere.
Yeah. And it was even odder because I even earlier in the episode, I had written something down wow, they're really doing well. They seem like they're killing it today. And then 5 minutes later, she's like, we're done. I'm quitting. Don't talk to me. It's like, wait, what happened? So I don't know. It's a weird one. And then she was really happy when she had the milk. And then a second later was mad and then happy. It's all over the map. I don't understand.
Well, I mean, I think I feel like you have to chalk it up to the conditions from one perspective. But I want to go back to what you said before, Jess, about how when you and Rob in the past few weeks have sort of been and Dana and Matt, yada, 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 which I would say kind of boils down to my general thoughts about this season thus far, which is, again, low expectations. It has surpassed them. I do feel like the first half of this race, episodes 1 through 6, in my opinion, weren't stellar. Just because, I don't know, the things that I enjoy about Amazing Race are getting to know these teams and to get to know these relationships. One of the cons of having people who are so famous online is that the editors feel like they don't need to tell these stories. You already know who Tyler Oakley is, so we don't need to have him describe himself, essentially. But the problem is, I don't know who Tyler Oakley is. I want to know who this guy is, besides he wears glasses and has quips and has his hair surprisingly coiffed in 100-degree heat.
The crazy thing is, though, I feel like I know Tyler better than I know, any of the couple teams.
Yeah, and that's the problem, is that, because Tyler's such a soundbite machine, they kept going back to him. But, you look at people like Bernie and Ashley had a couple moments, but then, Zach and Rachel just showed up last week, and then we have Matt and Dana coming back into prominence. I feel like once they came back from this 3-long-week break. I don't know if the editors got, a shot in the ass, if they had to race a camel at 40 miles an hour or something, but I feel like they got some new energy in them, and now they're starting to, really show all the teams, because I feel like these past two episodes, last episode and this, were by far the two best of the season, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think we're finally hitting our stride, and I think it's disappointing that it's taken us 8 episodes to get there, but I hope we don't lose any of that momentum going forward.
Right, because the episode right after the hiatus, I was really bored, and I liked the teams. They're nice people. They laugh a lot. They all seem to be enjoying it. They're not well, I mean, a few of them are kind of, one's kind of loud, but, you know, but overall I like the teams, but you, it doesn't matter how much I like them. If they're doing boring, dumb tasks, it doesn't matter, but I feel like they really have. This week was fun. Unfortunately, the end kind of killed the stakes, but the last few weeks have been better, but still better meaning okay, you know, yeah, you know, likable teams.
I got to be honest. I was really concerned when I saw Dubai. I'm thinking, like, how many times have they been to Dubai? This has got to be, like, the third or fourth time, and what is there possibly for them to do that they haven't already covered a million times? We even go back to the exact same resort that we were at in season 15, and I was thinking this is going to be a snooze, but even with some kind of flat tasks that we can kind of, we'll go task by task, but I felt like this was, you know, we kept up the momentum from last week, and they had tasks that were interesting to watch and highlighted the local culture, which I always love. And it's like you said, Dan, the teams are kind of carrying us now because they're interesting people, and if you give them something good to do, it makes good television.
Yeah, and I think the biggest point this week, too, is that they let them drive, and I think that almost always makes for – and you saw at the end – well, I mean, not to jump ahead too much, but Sherry saying, well, I don't want to drive. It's like, no, that makes for fun, Amazing Race because crazy stuff can happen.
Well, there's so many things this week. It was like people would say – crazy things that they say that they don't want to do, and it's like, but you're on the Amazing Race. Like, you don't want to drive, but you're on the Amazing Race. You don't like being challenged, but you're on the Amazing Race.
Yeah, and as I mean, as fun as we got to see, like, Tyler and Corey's cab driver go malicious and just probably mow down a few people on the sidewalk last round, I do feel like they're, at least to me, I love the self-driving element as well because it really ties into this main element of the Amazing Race, which is, like, basically traveling the world yourself with a camera crew and, with you know, within the blinders of a competition sense, but still you're, like, making your own way through the world. And it also leads to much more placement shifting, in my opinion. Granted, I do feel like as exciting as the task in this episode may have been, it was sort of a, okay, let's see if Sherry and Cole can basically get up to, catch up to anybody at this point, which, of course, the answer was no. But I liked how, you know, Zach and Rachel were in first, but then they passed the camel racing, and so they came in fourth. You know, I feel like self-driving and self-navigating, more often than the taxi drivers, in my opinion, lead to some more of that shakeup.
Yeah, yeah, and it makes it more like, you know, if you're not going to places, if you're not navigating, you might as well be on a soundstage, right?
Yeah, exactly. Which, again, these people are very used to, and I think one of the concepts, maybe one of the darker concepts that Phil decided when the producers decided on the show was like, let's bring these people out of their comfort zone and see what happens. And I think people like Dana took that bait because I don't think she would regularly have these screaming fits on her YouTube channel, or if she did, she would edit it out. But it's interesting. I mean, I think it speaks to a larger question of, like, overall, outside of the Dana and Matt stuff, is anyone else really getting a negative edit? I mean, I know some people have, like, complained about people like Blair. We might be able to complain about people like Cole and Brody for being loud. But outside of that, I don't think we've really seen that much negative stuff coming out of any of these teams so far.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that might be one reason that they're, I mean, should, I think they're nice people. But it does seem like, and that's why this week seemed kind of out of nowhere, is that the editors maybe, I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying it's a conspiracy, but they may be trying to present a more happy, fun race because I feel like there were a few episodes in the beginning where it was just people laughing and screaming and going, woo! And that's what most of the, and it's fun, but they're really trying to make it that way. And it could just be this cast is fun. I mean, Tyler, I don't think they have to do anything to make him get excited and laugh and stuff. That's just him. But you're right. It's not – and I've criticized them in the past for focusing too much on conflict and drama. But this might be on the other end. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's really interesting, especially like when you contrast it with Survivor this season, which has gotten really personal and really snipey. It's almost like they're going out of their way to make this the happy, fun, like, lovey, snuggly show.
Yeah, this is TAR Disneyland, basically, where it's like, hey, you're going to step into this season, you're not going to see any garbage, you know, everything's going to be clean, happy, fun, bright, You're going to absolutely love it. You're going to walk out smiling. You're going to be ready to come back again. And I feel like, you know, the race is really trying to promote, like, the positive aspect. This is almost like the exact opposite of Amazing Race 20, which when we ranked the seasons, we talked a little bit about how, like, there's a fine line where I know Rob really loved the conflict, but I know I, for example, it crossed a line with me of, like, I don't necessarily want to see people screaming at each other for an entire 42 minutes. So I feel like you need to have that fair balance.
Yeah, which I guess is why we have Dana. And yeah. Then we have everybody else. And I feel a little bit bad that, you know, she might not be the worst person in another season, but it's really like there's one source of conflict and everybody else seems to kind of be rolling with whatever's going on.
Yeah, it makes me wonder about Rachel, too, with, I mean, her struggling with the bike riding and then the little glimpse we saw next week. If things get tougher, we may see something where she kind of falls apart. But again, I think it's going to be, it's not like Zach's going to turn around and start yelling at her or something. I mean, it's going to, he's too supportive, which is good, but I think that might be the only other case. But teams just are happy. Even when they finish last, they're like, oh, it was fun. You know, yeah.
even when they have to wear tight as hell bathing suits that were off the set of Soul Train, they still were happy about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, those suits made me happy, but I wasn't wearing them.
Family show, Jess. Family show.
Yeah, well, we do have to talk a little bit about these, about the tiny bathing suits and the whole, like, Atlantis detour, because as you guys will recall, this is the site of one of the more infamous scenes in Amazing Race history. The infamous season 15 roadblock. And we got to talk a little bit about Mike the Country Singer and the Globetrotters kind of trying to make her feel like it's a really tough thing. And I was thinking, nobody's going to do a water slide. What is this? We're going to go, like, do the shark part. And then they found an even scarier water slide, which made me very, very happy.
Poor Micah. That was traumatic enough, and now they have to bring it back up now.
I doubt she's watching.
Yeah, no, to be honest, do you remember anything else about Micah and Kanan besides that? I guess you can balance whether you'd rather be infamously known on The Amazing Race or not known at all, but from my perspective, I'd rather have the former.
Yeah, well, Kanan is apparently quite famous now. Like, if you're into country music, he has quite a career for himself, but yeah, his ex-girlfriend, pretty much known only for not liking water slides at this point.
So how do you think this new slide, Poseidon's Revenge, which sounds a little too much like Montezuma's Revenge for my own
really
liking, how does that stack up to, what was it, the Leap of Faith? Does it look, as Phil says, like twice as fast and twice as scary? Would you go on it? Should you visit Atlantis in Dubai?
I mean, I've been on the one that, like, I haven't been to Dubai, but they have the same exact water slides in the Bahamas, and they do not have Poseidon's Revenge there, but I've been on the one that Micah freaked out on, and it's super fun. So, yeah, I'd be down.
I'd totally do it, but, I think they thought people would be more maybe freaked out by the floor dropping, because that's the real scary part.
Yeah.
But all I could tell besides that was a lot of people got a lot of water in the face. You couldn't really even tell how long it was from the video. It was just like, wow, that's a really close shot of Brody's face with water hitting him or something. But it looked fun to me. I would never, I'd be like, this is great compared to, like, you know, digging in sand or, you know, doing an oil change. This is wonderful.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the one drawback to going down a slide like that, especially in this bathing suits that were provided, is you are going to end up getting a little bit more intimate with that bathing suit than you may have previously planned on. But really, the wedgie is about the worst thing you can say about it.
Yeah, and again, compared to the fact that they had this also might have just been like a treat for them at the end of a very long day, considering that both detour options seemed either very physically fatiguing or just very long time-wise. Then they have to go and solve a pretty frustrating puzzle. So I think their reward is like, hey, you get to go down a water slide and have some fun.
Yeah, and it's also like, how much promotional consideration did Atlantis throw in for this? So we got to make sure we make it count. Like, it's not just a place where you solve frustrating puzzles. You can also go on water slides.
Yeah, they made sure to have a little bit of stock promotional footage there of the other slides. It was definitely on the nose. And I love how the sharks weren't even a thing. Like, there was a task in season 4 where they had to walk through a shark tank, and it was very dramatic, and it was like, they're going to get bit. And this was like, oh yeah, there's sharks, let's go to the puzzle. We barely saw the sharks.
Well, even season 18, this actually reminded me a lot of like their first roadblock, which had a very similar component of they had to walk through a shark tank, but they had to grab like semaphore, I think, or like those tins where they had to like spell out or use the flags to spell out a phrase. So unlike season 4, they didn't just have to walk, because I agree, like, sharks are not, much to people's misconception and what Shark Week may tell you, if you're going to get in like a tank with a shark, he's not just going to go after you. He's not going to tear you limb from limb. Yes, you want to proceed with caution, but unless you openly just cut your arm as soon as you dive in the tank, these sharks are not coming after you.
Yeah, these sharks seriously don't care if you're there. Like, I actually, this is something I have done. They have some shark snorkel and snuba things at Atlantis, and when we got married in the Bahamas, we went and we did some of them, and they tell you you can't approach the sharks, like, leave them alone, don't pet them, don't touch them. What they didn't tell me was that sometimes the sharks will touch you.
What a double standard.
Yeah, I know, right? So I'm like paddling along, I'm looking at the fish, and all of a sudden something brushes against my leg and the shark comes like right under me, and I'm freaked out a little bit, and the guide's like, well, I didn't say they weren't going to come to you, you just can't come to them. So I guess I'm kind of a shark whisperer in this regard, but really there's nothing scary about these guys. They're not that big, they're not that interested in you, except maybe just to like brush up against you. So it was kind of it's a little bit of one of those flashy tasks, which we have a lot of, where you don't really, you know, there's not a lot of actual peril involved. It just looks kind of cool. And then you get your, what I'm given to understand, the toy that this thing is based on is called a Wonderful Waterfall. And I had one when I was like 5. So I don't know how hard the puzzle really was, if they were just tired or what, but it looked to me like one of those little tiny ring toss things that you give to babies.
And yet Brody shook it like almost like a caveman or a Zoolander and thing or something.
What might that say about Brody's level of intelligence at that moment? not to disparage him too much, but I agree. I mean, what do we define a puzzle as? I feel like a puzzle is something that tests like ingenuity and knowledge. This was more like a test of hand-eye coordination. It's essentially like, hey, line up the letters. I don't know what they could have called it besides a puzzle. Maybe just like flippy cylinder. I don't know. This is why I don't work on the show. But I feel like calling it a puzzle and then being like, well, Zach's really good at puzzles. Like, no, Zach's just really good with his hands because he's a magician, so he could very easily just figure out where the letters need to be lined up.
Yeah, it was a test of precision, which, you know, they have those from time to time. You see them on Survivor a lot, and they probably call them puzzles there, too.
No, well, I don't know. What was, like, the last reward challenge? Would you call what the teams did a puzzle? Like, oh, here comes Jason, he's solving that puzzle by knocking down those blocks off that ledge.
Well, I think it depends on who's doing the throwing, because for some people that probably was a puzzle.
Very true, very true.
Not naming names, not calling anybody out, but I'm just saying.
Well, and it wasn't really good for TV. I mean, it was really hard. I guess the big question was, do you use the front or use the back? But we saw a lot of people just kind of like this, and it was hard to really see what was happening. So that kind of hurt too.
Yeah, it was not the most dynamic thing. I mean, that's the problem with, I would say, 90% of televised puzzles. I'm just going to throw it out there. Puzzles are fun to do, and they're not fun to watch pretty much ever. So I get the need to have them there for competition's sake, but, you know, I don't think anybody should be surprised when we're not all that interested in watching people do them.
Well, the ESPN just withdrew their support to fund the World Series of Puzzles, thanks to you, Jess.
I just ruined it.
You just ruined it. Now I have no reason to watch ESPN.
I'm a ruiner. Well, that wasn't going to be on ESPN1, Mike. That was going to be on, like, ESPN. It was going to be on Ocho. The Ocho.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be on the Ocho after the Dodgeball Finals. I'm saddened by the Shark Tank task because I feel like if it was on NBC, it would definitely would have been Sharknado related. If it was on ABC, you know, like Mark Cuban or Mr. Wonderful would have been there. But no, it was on CBS, so there was no synergy going on, unfortunately.
Yeah, that is a little bit rough. You have the one network with no sharks.
Exactly. Even Discovery could have done something, but we've got the sharkless network.
You know, I try to live every week like it's Shark Week. So now is a good time to remind everybody that we have a chat room going on here at robiswebsite.com. And we also will take your questions in the chat room. We can also take them via Twitter. Use the hashtag RHAP. Or you can go on our YouTube screen /channel/ wherever you're watching this and leave some comments there. We have Scott St. Pierre in the background monitoring all of your questions, and we will get to those a little bit later on in the program. But we should back up again if we have given enough thought to the shark puzzle. The puzzle had sharks in it. You didn't have to do anything with the sharks, so I guess it's a shark puzzle. And we should back up and we should talk a little bit more about this detour, because I thought this was a more interesting detour, and I was very excited to see the involvement of camels, who have historically been an excellent source of dramatic conflict and tension for amazing racers, but these camels seemed very well behaved.
Yeah, they were very good at running. I did really enjoy watching the racers quickly realize that camels run really fast and they are not such great bike riders. So that was entertaining. And I also think it was kind of a nice old school physical, you could get done fast versus slow, but kind of easy task. And I kind of like that. And people really seem to enjoy walking the camels, which I did not suspect. Must have been very well-trained camels.
One person in particular did not like walking those camels, but I feel like everyone else did. That one shot of Brody and Kurt, the wide shot of Brody and Kurt versus the camels, I know it was seen on the, like, this season on The Amazing Race, but that shot is awesome. Like, if the only thing we got out of that detour was that one shot, I would be totally happy, just because, yeah, everyone else kind of sucked on it, and at least the producers did kind of give them the pity throw of like, hey, if you lose the first time, we'll give you a head start. Otherwise, it would be like that one biathlon robot from Amazing Race Canada 2, where it was just like, yeah, just keep biking back and forth and shooting. That's not going to affect you at all. So I was happy about that. It might seem cheap, but it's going to expedite your race a lot faster rather than leaving. Could you imagine like Sherry and Cole having to do that like 5 times and then get lost and then get slowed down by everything else? It would have been a massacre.
That would have been a field elimination right there.
Yeah. A field non-elimination at that.
Yeah. Yeah. And field non-eliminations are kind of the worst, because it's like, well, it's the beginning of the leg and we're 19 hours behind, but we're going to get right back in it. And then you cut to all the other racers and it's like hours of operation, 5:30 to 8:30 on Sundays, and it's Thursday. I guess we're going to camp out here. What a weird set of opening hours. I wonder how they stay in business.
It would have been like a Nick and Vicky, where when they found out they weren't eliminated, they looked so disappointed.
Yeah, because they quit the detour.
What are you doing to us? I also liked how the camel part of it I'm just throwing out early season stuff again. I apologize. Reminded me of season 1, Kevin and Drew leading the camels in to the pit stop. And, I mean, for that first season, it felt very similar. No camel milk, though, so this is an improvement.
Oh, there was camel milk. Yeah. You're saying no camel milk in season 1. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, that was the first place my brain went to, because I was thinking about, like, how those camels really did not want to move, and these camels were just kind of like, yeah, all right, whatever. Also, I think every task should come with a snack.
Yeah, exactly.
Really,
like, hey, take a break, sit down, have some bread and some milk, and then you can keep going. It's okay. You can take a break. Everyone else is.
Yeah, like I love that everyone was so happy to see it, too. Just like, oh, this is delicious. What a great moment for us. And it's like, well, if they'd said on the clue that this had a snack with it, I think everybody would have taken that detour.
Yeah, it surprised me. Some of the teams... I mean, that more teams didn't switch. I guess the head start made the difference, so Tyler and Corey finished. But if I had done that and been blown out by the camels, I would have been like, forget this. Let's go walk the camels. But teams stuck with the bike riding. I don't know.
Yeah, well
I mean, go ahead.
Who did it more than twice? Like, everybody seemed to get it after they got the head start. So I think it was like only the people that were really opposed to biking, like the people that were, you know, almost throwing up from it, like Ashley, or the people that have a previously undisclosed fear of going fast on bikes, like Rachel. Like, then it does make sense to switch. But otherwise, like, just take your head start and, you know, accept it.
Plus, Tyler and Corey learned last week they almost got eliminated because they switched detours.
Yeah.
So I feel like they're still burning from that, even though they didn't get eliminated. So they would say, like, all right, we learned our lesson. Let's just stick with what's in front of us and keep going because we're guaranteed to do this faster than if we had switched.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, if you're Tyler and Corey, you're probably not switching any detour for the rest of the game.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And, of course, I didn't know how much head start they got. I mean, it could have been, you know.
They put them right before the finish line.
It's like, you know, you're 100 feet away, right? And then they're like, okay, the camels go. And then they somehow use camera work to make it seem close or something. So it was probably the right idea.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so do we have anything else we want to cover about this episode before we start diving into some questions here?
Should we talk about the Express Pass use?
Yeah, we can talk about the Express Pass use because, I mean, they're getting to the point where they got to use it anyway, right?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, even the other teams were wondering, was this a good move? And I think, you know, having just seen Tanner and Josh blow it the previous round, I mean, I'm always of the theory with Express Passes that, like, there's two ways you can basically use them. It's to get yourself out of a jam or to just further propel yourself in first place. It seems like Brody and Kurt were doing it for the latter, even though they initially tried to make it seem like the former with, like, oh no, Brody's struggling on the puzzle. But, you know, at the beginning of the episode, he said he wanted another win so he could take Blair somewhere, and it looks like they're going to Helsinki.
Yeah, I mean, unless, yeah, maybe they still are, but didn't Blair kind of give it away in the exit interview that, you know, Brody is no more?
Yeah, that was sad when I heard that. I thought they were in it for the long haul, really. I thought Blody was going down the aisle. They were done.
They would at least last until they had a season of returning teams.
What? Hey, if Azaria and Christina from Ron and Christina got together and they got, you know, they lasted that long. You never know what this random team love. And by the way, if you haven't listened yet out there, listen to Rob's interview with Blair and Scott because it gives you it will show you how awesome Scott is as a person. He was a little low key over his time in the race, but he's just fantastic. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. It would be a shame if Blody got to run as a team in a returning season because then we wouldn't get Scott.
Yeah, because Scott really, he was like the superstar. His dancing last week is still one of the big surprises on the race for me. Like, when he chose it, I went, he's done. But no. Well, no. Then they were done. But
I mean, they were done through, you know, other things. But, he had some moves. I was impressed as well. This seemed like, on its face, maybe a little bit of an odd place to use the Express Pass, but they did get a little bit scared when they got stuck in the sand, and it looked like maybe, you know, you hear Brody say, oh, we're in last place now, which we knew wasn't true, but I think maybe that put a little bit of the fear of God into them, and they thought, well, we just need to burn this Express Pass off and get back out in front any way possible, because this thing could happen again.
Yeah, and I don't know how much, you know, I know they're big fans of the race. I mean, there were three of them standing today during the roadblock that pointed at the water slide and said, ha, 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 remember when Mika couldn't do that. But I don't know how big of a fans Brody and Kurt are, but if they were, they could probably realize, hey, there's a good chance a double U-turn is coming up. And one of the big targets for a double U-turn usually is an Express Pass user because it basically forces them to burn it off. Let's get rid of this thing that, you know, that they pulled over our heads going into the next round so that way we're on equal footing with everyone else. So arguably they have the most wins out of all the teams so far. They're still going to have a bounty on their heads coming into the next U-turn.
Yeah, do you think there's going to be U-turns? Because I would assume it would come next week, but they didn't show it in the preview, I don't think. So I wonder if they're not doing it.
Apparently there was one on leg three that was just unaired, which I can understand with early U-turns, it's tough. Even if you don't know each other, it's still tough because there's just so many teams. But I could see it happening, you know, if not at final six, definitely at final five. I feel like those are the prime rounds for the U-turns to come in.
The final five U-turn feels really late to me, but I think you're right. That's probably when we're going to get it.
Yeah, and I don't like it at the five because I feel like it gives too much power to kick out a strong team, but it could happen. But also with the Express Pass, I think it worked too because it was so late in the leg. Like we saw last season where they used it early in the leg and then got stuck. At least here they used it at the end, so they could have figured there probably was – they didn't know about the water slide, but there probably wasn't going to be much more to do.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of like having a drag race and then pushing out nitrous oxide at the very end to give you that final boost into the finish line. Like once you see the finish line is almost right in front of you, then it's a good time to just kind of have a guarantee to make sure you'll be able to get first place.
Yeah, I mean the other thing about making it to the U-turn is you got to still be in the race at that point. So you might as well like get yourself out in front, guarantee yourself a spot in the next round, and you got to take it leg to leg. Anyway, I think with that covered, we can probably start moving into some questions here. And once again, you can leave those questions on our YouTube page. You can leave them in the chat room at robinswebsite.com, or you can tweet them to us with the hashtag RHAP. So we're going to start things off. Nick2S wants to know, why were they Eskimo kissing in the desert?
Let's talk about that Bedouin kissing for a second, or the Bedouin greeting, because people did make audible kissing noises at some point. I think maybe it was Corey first like went in for the kiss initially, but there also was very interesting. I mean, I guess in that culture, I guess males were the only ones that are allowed to do it, because there was a shot of like Ashley and Rachel and somebody else like standing outside the tent. I guess the males were only allowed to do the greeting.
Yeah, that is interesting. They didn't really get into that, did they? But it seemed to me like they were kind of, it was kind of like, you know, that thing that wasps do where you do like the air kissing on the cheeks. It felt like maybe that was where they were going with making the kissing noises while they did it.
Yeah, I also enjoyed Phil not being interested in recreating that moment. He just kind of smiled like, yes, that's very funny. Let's move on.
Well, in Phil's opinion, love died after Amazing Race 26, so he has no volition to try to push people to kiss each other at all at any point during the race.
Yeah, but I think Phil should understand that love happens when you least expect it. Like, you know, he didn't do anything, and look what happened with Bloaty.
That's true.
They came together on their own, and maybe that's a lesson for Phil.
Do you think Phil was going to start a random showmance between Corey and the Bedouin?
I would ship it.
What is their name? Betty? Corian?
I don't know, man. Corian, isn't that like a ceramic countertop material?
Yeah, something like that. I'm thinking like coriander.
Coriander is a spice. So maybe it's a spicy relationship.
Yeah.
All right, so Scott Schieffer wants to know, what would have to happen to cause Cole and Sherry to lose their amazingly positive attitudes?
She could have to change a car's oil again. I don't know. It was weird. Like, even when they like went to ask for directions, they were just like, hey, can you guys help us for directions? And the guy was showing them. I don't know. I think they're so amazed that they're still in the race that it's all gravy from now on.
And I mean, to be honest, I'm a little surprised they're still in the race. I mean, I think, you know, we don't need to do, like, power rankings, but I feel like of the six, the consensual pick is that they're kind of near the bottom. I mean, this is the second time they're being saved by either a non-elimination or a to-be-continued. I think that's very demonstrative of the fact that they're kind of, you know, they're welcoming everyone to the bottom, it seems, whenever people tend to fall behind.
Yeah, it's true. I think there are, you know, of the teams that are remaining in the race, there are five that could arguably be competitive, and you have Cole and Sherry, who are still inexplicably there. And, I mean, who knows? We've had seasons like this before, and that's the team that ends up winning. So I would say anything is possible at this point, but I do agree, like, it seems like every time we see them now, in their heads, they're thinking, well, we're on television. We got to not be, you know, we got to not come off as, like, negative sourpusses. We got to not be bitter. Let's have our speech ready for Phil about how we learned a lot about each other and about the race and the world. We got it ready. We can just give it to Phil as soon as we get there. And then Phil's like, yeah, I don't want to hear it right now. You're still racing.
That's so cynical. Are you saying that these teams are trying to, you know, come up with material? What? I don't understand.
You know, it's maybe I'm not giving them enough credit here, Dan, but it sure feels to me like they're the one thing that is good is that you do sometimes get teams that have no concept of how they're going to come across on television. I think with maybe one possible exception, everybody here has some idea of what they're going to look like to the viewers at home.
Yeah, that's true, though. I feel like the positivity is effectively coming from, and interestingly enough, the one person who, one of the people that's not involved with that community, right? We have these sort of plus ones here where, you know, Tyler and Corey are YouTubers, but Scott was not doing YouTube videos with Blair.
No, and so, unfortunately.
Some of the fun of those parent-child teams in particular were that the people that were not necessarily the ones that were ready for camera and were the YouTube personalities, because I feel like they might have been more raw and like actual people sometimes. So, you know, you have to appreciate that Sherry, for being the one that doesn't have a camera in her face 24/7, is the one that's kind of driving the team's positivity, considering that she was like beaming when she got to the mat. Though that might have also been because she thought like, oh, thank God I get to go home and get a massage, you know. Oh, great, we still have to keep going.
Yeah, well, Sherry has kind of worn her heart on her sleeve the entire time. Like, she is the one that's gotten a little bit sobby at things. And she is a more effusive, emotional person, I think, in general. But, yeah, her reactions seem a little bit more natural sometimes. And I could certainly see, like, I would love to be a fly on the wall during the pit stops where they're talking about what their strategy is for the camera. Because you know Cole's got one.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. He's, you know, he's fun to watch on TV, but he's, you know, there's some maneuvering the character there.
Just a little bit. I mean, he's not the only one that does it by a very long shot, but it is pretty apparent. Okay, so Sydney wants to know, hey, how about that Tyler and Corey comeback?
Was that the one where Corey said, like, I'd feel embarrassed if I got beaten by a camel, and then Tyler says, don't call me that? Is that what we're referring to?
Maybe that's what we're referring to. I think
that's so many quips. It's tough to pick.
It is. Like, they are the masters of the comeback, but I think they're the master of the comeback in more than one turn of phrase, shall we say. Because they had a couple of really off weeks, and now they're right back in it. I think we can safely say that, you know, Rob and I were wondering, are Tyler and Corey done? Like, have they run out of steam? And I think the answer to that after this week is definitely no.
Yeah, I agree. I actually picked them to go out in my pool that I do, and that was, I felt very dumb very quickly tonight. So.
Well, your pool was filled with sharks because they tore apart your score, apparently.
Which is very normal for me, so.
Yeah, you know, speaking of scores, we're not really going to talk about this in much detail because Rob's not here, but Rob remains in the lead, but I am slowly but surely catching up to him. I believe the fantasy team standings as of right now, we are looking at, I'm going to pull it up here because I want to feel vindicated, but Rob's leading me by only 12 points at this point. He's got 196 to my 184, and I owe it all to Kurt and Brody, so thanks, yeah. Guys. Very exciting.
They're carrying your team on their back, and rightfully so. I mean, they had a couple of down weeks, but I don't know. I know they're Zach and Rachel won a leg, and Bernie and Ashley might have Joey and Kelsey upside here, but I pretty much think it's a two-man horse race between the guy teams of Tyler and Corey and Kurt and Brody.
It is, but I think one of these other teams could sneak out and steal it right from under them.
Yeah, I agree. I think those two teams are likely to be in the final three, unless one of them, especially maybe Tyler and Corey, becomes the beloved final four, fourth place team. But those two feel like they're going to be there.
Yeah, they really do. It seems like it is being set up to be that kind of competition. All right, so Marissa G, she says this is for me, but I think maybe she didn't know that I was going to be having two other people that are as prone to diving into old school Amazing Race as I am. So, you know, Rob wouldn't, maybe this wouldn't be his cup of tea, but I think it's definitely ours. She wants to know, how would you compare tonight's episode to the sixth leg from season 15, the one with Micah's famous meltdown, the Globetrotters' briefcase roadblock struggle, and the gold value hookah detour? So, as far as Dubai legs, how do we rank this?
So I like that leg, but I actually like, I think the previous leg they did in Dubai as well, that episode. I think it was where Lake and Michelle got eliminated. I think there were people named Lake and Michelle who competed on the race. It was, because I remember.
Season 9 they were. Yeah.
Oh, season 9. I'm thinking of season 15, there was another couple that like kind of reminded me of them, though I forget their names at the moment. But it was, I loved it because it was about like the hot and the cold, because I think like the detours were basically like, build a snowman in the desert, and then like go to like a synthetic ski park and find a snowman buried in there. So I like that because, you know, we hadn't visited Dubai since season 5. In season 5, it was as much as I love season 5, it was a little generic in Dubai. So I was happy that they were like, okay, let's find all this cool stuff to do in Dubai. And they did it so much that they extended it another couple of legs, which is why we got that water slide moment as well. So I would say like as a big package of Dubai, I think season 15 might be my favorite of the 4 times we've been there.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. And I think nothing can really top that initial moment of being like, what, they're going skiing and they're in Dubai? Like, I loved that because just for the sheer, like, WTF factor.
Oh, and yeah. Lance and Carey were the people I was thinking about.
Oh, yeah, the dude with the, like, biceps larger than his head. I remember.
Yeah, and, like, the weird beard, which reminded me of Lake and Michelle, so that's probably where the association came from.
I have a photo with them, and he is flexing in the photo.
It's like he does that a lot, with or without photos.
Yes, because of course
every day.
Every day of his life.
I agree. I think also, too, having that, I mean, that water slide moment was pretty painful, but it is kind of an iconic moment from the show, especially with the Globetrotters sitting next to her in her ear going, it's terrible. You don't want to do it. You don't want to do it. And then laughing. I mean, it's a signature moment. I remember that. There's plenty of things from seasons that I don't remember. And this episode I liked. I mean, I'll remember it, but I don't think it's going to be iconic if we get to, you know, 15 seasons from now. Season 43 or 44, you know, as far as we get. So where are we? What are we on right now?
Oh, my God. You're talking about another, like, 8 or 9 years of Amazing Race at this point, Dan. You are very positive. You should send in those letters to CBS being like, I hope you keep Amazing Race on for season 43 or 44.
And I was doing very bad math there, too. So I went from 15 to 28 and somehow added 15. So I'm going to go sit. I'm not ready for math right now. So
yeah, I'm definitely going to, if Dan and I ever run the Amazing Race, I'm definitely going to do all the math roadblocks.
That would be a mistake.
Yeah. But hey, if they want to go to 43 seasons, you know, bring it, because someday I'm going to have to put kids in college. So just saying. All right, so Adam555 wants to know, what would you consider a good example of a puzzle challenge ideal for viewing in Amazing Race? A maze, maybe.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Survivor challenge that's always really fun to watch for me. It's the one where they go
even,
with the giant.
Yeah. Even like the opening challenge from 27 of like the sliding puzzle to make it look like the boardwalk on the pier. I thought that was fine as well. I think it's when you do these smaller puzzles. Like I think 23 had that one, like that one really hard puzzle. But then in 23 you had, in Final Four, you had that sort of puzzle of constructing that giant metallic figure in Japan. So I feel like for me with puzzles on Amazing Race, I feel like the bigger the better in terms of scope. Like I want to see you create something giant and something we can see rather than just like a little cylinder that you just keep flipping.
Yeah, it's true. Like don't just give somebody a puzzle you bought at the drugstore. You know,
exactly.
Make it something that's kind of got some scope to it, and I think that definitely helps it. And I think that's true across the board. Like if I'm watching Big Brother, I want to see large puzzles. If I watch Survivor, I want to see large puzzles. Like give me something visually dynamic, and I'm not going to complain as much that they're not doing something physical.
Yeah, and it's just it doesn't really. I mean, yes, it's okay if not every task perfectly ties to the culture, but I mean, you'd like to have something that's memorable and preferably something that's actually you couldn't just do in any leg on any Amazing Race season.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems like too often the puzzles are like, well, we can't think of another task that's culturally relevant, so we're just going to have it look like something that you might see here. And yeah, that's less fun. Japanese Puzzle Box was another one I thought at first that was going to be really boring, and it turned out to be okay. Okay, Sinochick wants to know, Just how far were the last two teams from the rest of the pack? It was nighttime when they checked in at the mat.
Good question. If they're flying to Indonesia next episode, it's pretty much going to be made up. I mean, they showed with the departing times in the beginning of this episode. I think Tyler and Corey left like 2.5 hours after Zach and Rachel did, but it was all mitigated because they all got on the same plane. So as much as Dana and Matt really and Sherry and Cole really might have dragged behind, I doubt that's going to make any sort of difference because it really seems like outside of the Darius and Cameron stuff, they're really on the path of, like, let's just put everyone on one flight to make it easy and then fly them over together.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's probably 2 or 3 hours, but they're not staying there, and that's the only way it would hurt them.
Yeah, and I think when you're doing, I think in previous seasons, there was a lot more of people being able to choose their own flights because, A, they had a bigger budget for it, and, B, they weren't necessarily every leg going from a semi-random place to another semi-random place. And in this case, in Dubai, I'm kind of surprised that they don't get to book their own flights at a certain point because Dubai is like one of the major airline hubs. So it seems like there would be flights to everywhere all the time. So I'm going to be surprised if they don't. I'd be surprised if both ends of this involved like some kind of charter flight.
Speaking of booking flights, was this a purple gnome this episode? I feel like the gnome has been involved in so much stuff in the past. They found it at the Bedouin camp. They acknowledged it a couple times. They put it at the front of the bike, but it pretty much like wasn't. It didn't have any part in the water slide challenge except for that one shot. I thought I want to see more gnome. You know, the Travelocity gnome was hyping his appearance, but it didn't end up living up to expectations, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, the gnome has really taken less of an active role in the show these past couple of seasons. Like, he doesn't live tweet the episodes anymore, and he's really, like, they sort of carried him around for visibility, but you used to have moments of, like, people saying cute things or, like, pretending they're going to make him do a roadblock, and, you know, this time it was just like, you know, please wear this corporate logo for the duration of the leg.
Yeah, they didn't get a special prize with a stamp on the bottom, which is sometimes was fun because a team would finish fifth and win like a big trip or something. And while that's kind of obvious product stuff, it's fun. But beyond the fun shot of him on the bike, yeah, it was like they could have just stamped something on their shirt pretty much.
Yeah, and like especially like it used to be you'd have this kind of threat hanging over your head like you don't bring this gnome everywhere, you're going to get in trouble. It was like the times when they had people carry the live chicken on the leg. And this one, it was like, yeah, we're just going to carry him around. And I want someone to lose the gnome, okay? If we're going to carry it around the whole time, like, let's have someone set it down and forget it and have to go back for it. You know?
Which is more egregious on The Amazing Race, losing your passports or losing the Travelocity gnome?
Losing your passports, although the Travelocity gnome is a little bit, there's a little bit more opportunity to be really annoying to the viewer because it'll be like, oh no, we've lost our Travelocity gnome. We must go back and get our Travelocity gnome, sponsored by Travelocity.
And you can imagine the locals are like, what do we do with this? The stupid people, Americans, left their gnome behind. Can we just like throw it away?
Yeah, and can you imagine Phil getting like salty at somebody who has forgotten their gnome? It's like, I'm sorry, I can't check you in because you didn't bring your gnome.
I think it's like a 24-hour penalty if you... That's like the strictest penalty ever for the gnome. But you're immediately eliminated from the race. That should be the new rule.
Yep. You forget your gnome, you're out.
I know you came in first place, but you didn't have your gnome, so I'm sorry. You're going home.
And you definitely don't get the Travelocity trip if you forget your gnome.
In fact, we're taking all your trips back from Travelocity.
In fact, you have to pay for trips for them.
Yeah, exactly. You have to book flights for all the other teams to those locations.
Yep.
We are giving so much good material to CBS. I think this is the theme of next season.
It's going to be, yeah, Amazing Race 29, go gnome or go home.
Man, I don't know why they haven't hired us yet.
They just watch the show and steal our ideas.
Yeah. All right, so we probably have time for one final question here, and we've got one from The Elk Speaks, wants to know, is anyone else tired of all the flights that reset the standings this season on The Amazing Race? And we've talked about this a little bit, but I'd love to get a little bit more detail on that.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings, because I sort of like sometimes putting in the airport stuff and letting them try to find their own flights. However, if it goes a certain way, it can totally sap the drama out of the whole episode, because if some team screws up at the airport and then they're last, you spend the whole episode with them going, we can catch up, we can catch up, and then they never do. So I feel like, you know, it can work great, but it can't. But I do appreciate them at least some point making, like, kind of like driving, make them do something else. Let's at least make them try sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, Jess, you brought this up a myriad of times on previous podcasts. When, you know, when you do that, you have the double-edged sword of, yes, it can create great drama. And, you know, old-school TAR had a lot of scenes that just took place in airports. Sometimes they didn't even get to the destination country until, like, a third of the way through the episode because so much was centric on the airports. But then if you have teams that are great at it, see Colin and Christy in Season 5 or Charlotte and Myrna in Season 11, you're going to pull out way ahead of the rest of the pack, and it's going to make for boring television. So I'd say I'd go with what Dan said. Do it in moderation, because especially when you sporadically put it up, that's also going to keep teams on their toes, I feel like, to say, like, well, we don't have things set out in front of me. I also like, I mean, I guess to split the difference, you could do what they do sometimes, which is like, hey, you have this flight already booked, but you have the option of searching for more options. Because that at least says, like, hey, you're not going to be stuck behind. You're not going to be the gutsy grannies or Chester and Ephraim. But at the same time, you still have an option of being able to further your lead by going after another flight as well.
Yeah, but you might be Kent and Vixen in that scenario.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Like, we want to use it. We want people to be able to use their travel savvy, but we also want to keep it interesting. Like, we don't want somebody to be days and days ahead, and we don't want, like, I think one of my favorite examples was, I think it was season 13 or 14 in Cambodia, where one team was 24 hours behind, and they kept cutting to them, and it looked like it was the same time of day, but it was an entire day after. So, we'd like
to... Oh, yeah, I think it was that, like, Aja and Ty, it
yes.
might have been?
Yes, it was. I couldn't remember their names, but yeah. So we want to try to avoid that, like get everybody at least in the same place on the same day. And I think the cream does tend to rise to the top in those cases because, you know, we've had a lot of equalization points, but we've had a lot of the same teams in the back of the pack and the same teams are in the front of the pack. So,
yeah,
you know, I think we have a very good balance here.
Yeah, it's good navigation skills. It awards good teams, but doesn't make for great TV. And reality TV is always about finding that balance between rewarding actual merit and making for entertaining television. So I feel like using it sparingly is kind of perfectly living in kind of both of those realms.
I do kind of love how over time the show kind of finds an equilibrium with regard to these things, like, and even like more than once, because very early on in the show you would have like several seasons where the third place team at the end of the race was so far behind that they didn't even get to finish. And now it's like they've overcorrected for a while, and now they're hitting the happy medium, and that makes me very happy. All right, so do we have any final thoughts before we kind of let you guys all go for the night?
No, I mean, I think this season is definitely on the upswing. The past couple episodes specifically. So I'm hoping that with less teams around, with more teams to focus on, and, you know, with people like Dana becoming more and more unhinged, I think it should lead to a really energetic final few episodes. At least I hope so. I think we only have, what, like 4 episodes left? It's felt like a long season just because we had that 3-week break in the middle, which has functioned like almost like 3 non-elimination legs. So the season feels long, but it's actually going to wrap up fairly quickly.
Yeah, I like to think that, you know how people sometimes think the survivors are actually still on the island while the show is airing? I like to think that those 3 weeks were just like non-elimination legs that they spent in the airport.
Yeah, it's crazy that we've had like one elimination in the last 6 weeks because of the time off or something. And so it's made the season feel weird. And I agree with Mike, though. I'm not ready to rank this, but it has potential to at least move past some seasons or move forward if it finishes like the last few. But if it kind of falters a bit and we have, I don't know. I mean, I don't blame the cast mostly, but I don't know. They're going to cool places. I just hope they keep doing good tasks.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. And thank you, Jess, for having us on. It's always fun to get the holy Tarinity back together to reminisce about old school seasons and talk about the current one as well.
That's true. We're going to have to do our rankings all over again at the end of this season.
Oh, boy.
Have to make it 3 hours again.
Yeah, yep. we have to keep improving upon our time every season that passes.
Absolutely. All right, so you guys can find Dan Heaton on Twitter at TheDanHeaton. And you can find Mike Bloom on Twitter at AMikeBloomType. So, you know, there's the Dan and a Mike. And you can find me at Haymaker Hattie. You can find Rob at Rob Sesternino. And you can find him next Friday with me as we will go into episode 9. There is no exit interview on Monday. I'm sure Rob's going to be relieved to see that. And everybody else, have a great week. And I guess we'll just sign off now, and we will talk to you next Friday.